Gold bugs, on the fringe no more. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter Stansberry's Complete Investor, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Finding high-quality companies that can weather any storm. Edgar Allan Poe coined the term gold bug in his 1843 short story of the same name. The gold bug follows the adventures of William Legrand, who discovers a gold-colored beetle on Sullivan's Island, South Carolina, and believes it to be made of solid gold. The bug leads him on an adventure hunting for buried treasure. By the 1870s, the gold bug label had been adopted by those who favored using the precious metal as the basis for the U.S. monetary system. President William McKinley officially backed the U.S. dollar with gold in 1900, ending a vigorous debate between supporters of gold and backers of silver over which metal would prevail as the exclusive basis for the U.S. currency. Fun side note, L. Frank Baum's The Wizard of Oz is widely interpreted as a political allegory for this late 19th century battle. Key symbols include silver shoes, free silver, the yellow brick road, gold standard, the Emerald City, deceptive Washington, D.C., and characters representing farmers, workers, and politicians like William Jennings Bryan, with Oz standing for ounces of precious metals. As the government struggle over monetary issues intensified into the 1896 election, the political rhetoric turned more heated. Eventually, the term gold bug became derogatory. Preaching prudence and fiscal responsibility was deemed to be a nutty fringe concept, even back then. The country still maintained the gold standard until President Franklin Roosevelt abandoned it in 1933. President Richard Nixon firmly cut any relation between U.S. greenbacks and gold in August 1971. By retaining a fixed exchange rate of dollars to a hard asset like gold, governments felt too constrained in their ability to enact expansionary policies. Imagine if those Americans could see the country today. Perhaps President Franklin Roosevelt felt that his policies would be a temporary fix given the unusual severity of the Great Depression. But once the genie is out of the government spending bottle, it can never be put back in. Today, U.S. national debt is $38.4 trillion. And counting. There is no longer any political party preaching, even whispering. Fiscal responsibility and financial markets appear to have finally taken notice. The harsh reality is that all this massive deficit spending only ends one way, that is, badly. Gold bugs might have been viewed as being well out of the mainstream years ago, but with gold up 65% in 2025, no one is laughing at the gold bugs now. Of course, gold isn't the only hard asset flashing warning signs regarding excess government spending. Silver skyrocketed 148% in 2025. That includes a parabolic move in December in which the often forgotten precious metal surged 27% just in that last month of the year alone. These moves in gold and silver are happening for a reason, and investors should be taking notice. But this doesn't mean abandoning the stock market. In fact, far from it, as many stocks can also benefit from inflation or represent good stores of value in volatile times. Sticking with high-quality companies that have attractive valuations and strong free cash flow is an all-weather strategy. In this issue of Complete Investor, we provide updates on six stocks that fit the bill. The first is an underappreciated land asset poised to capitalize on the data center boom, and an LNG producer seeking a new path to profits. Another is a leading sports and lifestyle apparel brand in the midst of a turnaround. There is a high-growth international e-commerce retailer that continues to fly under the market's radar, and also a leading alcohol producer that continues to transform its portfolio of brands. And finally, we look at and still like a well-known transportation company poised to take the next leap to autonomous driving. Precious metals may be signaling that the government is acting irresponsibly, but that doesn't mean investors should. So let's dig into the stocks to find some great values for 2026. Old school Texas Pacific Land jumps into data centers on November 5th. Texas Pacific Land, NYSE, TPL, reported a strong Q3 2025. Revenue increased 17% from the same period a year ago to $203 million, 6% ahead of analyst estimates. The result was led by strong oil and gas royalty revenue of $109 million, a 15% year-over-year increase. Water resources revenue of $81 million was strong as well, up 21%. EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, in the quarter was $174 million, up 20% from the prior year and well ahead of consensus expectations. With robust EBITDA margins of 85% consistent with recent history, the revenue upside flowed through consistently to the bottom line. Investors clearly liked the results, with the stock up 10% on the day, but the operating results themselves are only part of what boosted shares, The discussion on the earnings call focused on the potential data center opportunity for Texas Pacific. Management commented that West Texas is becoming very popular for data center buildouts and that the company was close on a couple interesting opportunities. Texas Pacific is one of the largest landowners in Texas with approximately 882,000 acres located in the Permian Basin, a location that is becoming even more valuable because of the data center buildout trend fueling huge energy and electricity demand. Data centers require a lot of electricity to be able to run, and that electricity is largely fueled by natural gas. Operators are trying to move closer to the inputs for electricity to ensure adequate supply given concerns over the adequacy of the electric grid to support the aggressive efforts of hyperscalers, the big tech companies, Amazon, AMZN, Meta, META, Alphabet, GOOG, and Microsoft, MSFT, leading the charge in artificial intelligence, AI. However, energy demand isn't the only way Texas Pacific will participate in this booming trend. Water is going to be a key part of the story. Those data centers run hot and require water to cool them. As demand in the region grows, Texas Pacific is likely to see growth in its royalty streams from the water side as well. The data center hype became real for Texas Pacific on December 17, when it announced a strategic agreement with Bolt Data and Energy to develop data center campuses and related infrastructure across the company's footprint in the Permian. Former Google CEO Eric Schmidt founded and raised $150 million for Bolt. $50 million of that is coming from Texas Pacific themselves, with the company receiving equity and warrants. And what's key, Texas Pacific has the right of first refusal on water supply for the project, highlighting the potential water opportunity for the company above and beyond the potential land and energy demand. This project is in its early stages, but Bolt Data seems credible given its pedigree and capital. Investors should expect more announcements like this as operators race to lock up resources while they still can. This looks like just the beginning for Texas Pacific Land. Action to take: buy Texas Pacific Land, NYSE, TPL, up to $335 per share. EQT goes unhedged. Natural gas producers often hedge their production, using the futures markets to lock in prices to ensure a profit. And leading U.S. natural gas producer EQT, NYSE, EQT, has followed this practice since the Rice brothers took over in 2019. Usually covering 70% to 80% of near-term production. That smoothed out quarterly earnings and made it easier for Wall Street's analysts to predict earnings. The downside: when natural gas prices rise, the hedges cap the upside. In 2022, such hedges cost $4.6 billion. EQT is planning to eliminate hedges for most of its gas sales starting in 2026. The table below from its latest financial filing in October shows the steep drop-off in volumes of hedged gas starting in Q1. We'll find out more details on EQT's hedging position and plans for 2026 on the company's upcoming Q1 earnings call in mid-February. Today, EQT is an investment-grade credit, so with a lower cost of capital and greater access to funding, EQT's management now has the option of tolerating higher-cost volatility with an eye toward capturing large profits when gas prices boom. We think that's a great choice. By 2030, massive growth in LNG exports plus soaring energy demand from data centers will consume over 50 billion cubic feet per day, BCF/D, of natural gas, roughly half of U.S. production. But even these numbers don't explain the opportunity fully. When gas prices rise, as they have recently because of cold weather, many industrial natural gas users, like fertilizer plants, will shut down production, creating more supply for utilities. Going forward, demand for data centers won't have this flexibility as data centers must remain always on. This change in the market's dynamic sets up the potential for enormous price increases in the future. By unhedging, EQT is positioning itself to provide investors full exposure to rising natural gas prices and winter price spikes. The cost? More volatility in quarterly results. We like that trade-off and continue to believe that EQT is one of America's best-run companies. Action to take: buy EQT, NYSE, EQT. Up to $60 per share, Nike plods its way toward a turnaround. Shoe and apparel giant, Nike NYSE, NKE, reported another strong result with its fiscal Q2 26 report on December 18. Revenue increased 0.6% from the same quarter a year ago to $12.4 billion, exceeding analyst estimates by $190 million. Gross margins were down slightly, even though cost control was in line, with selling, general, and administrative expenses up only 0.8% compared to guidance for a high single-digit increase. That all added up to earnings per share, EPS, of 53 cents, well ahead of 37 cents consensus expectations for the quarter. Despite the big bottom-line earnings upside, there were some hiccups. Sales in North America were up 9% in Q2, well ahead of consensus expectations of 1%. But there was a wide disparity in channel performance, with wholesale sales up a whopping 24% while direct-to-consumer, DTC, was down 10%. That was reflective of a broader pattern with company-wide wholesale sales up 8% but DTC down 9%. Past leadership had looked to bypass wholesalers and go direct-to-consumer. In the last year or so, under new CEO Elliott Hill, Nike has been pushing harder in the wholesale channel, repairing relationships that had been ignored during prior leadership. That's a good thing. But the DTC sales decline is still concerning. Relying so much on wholesale can open the company up to potential inventory management issues down the road. Category results were also mixed for the quarter. A key bright spot was Nike's running segment, where sales increased 20% from the same period a year ago. That was fueled by reinvigorated new product lines like Vomero and Pegasus. Shoe innovation was a core element of the turnaround plan, and it's clearly working. But classic franchises like Jordan, Dunk, and AF1 were down 20% in the quarter, and management expects those declines in classics to continue into the second half of the company's fiscal year. There was also a wide gap across geographies in terms of sales strength. The key North American market looked great, but regions outside of North America saw sales decline, and the company's China business continues to struggle, with sales down a staggering 16% from a year ago. That decline worsened from the 10% decline in Q1. Further, the company expects China to be a weak spot for the next few quarters, with a similar decline expected in Q3. Management has been consistent with its messaging that its turnaround isn't going to be linear. That's evident both on the sales side as well as in margins. On the tariff front, on the call, management noted that excluding higher import costs, margins would have grown 520 basis points in Q2, implying a jump to 48.8% this quarter from 43.6% a year ago. While the company is doing a good job managing through the tariff turmoil, the costs are real and will continue. Despite the speed bumps, Nike's turnaround plan is kicking into high gear. Looking beyond Nike's temporarily depressed earnings, the stock is trading at just over 2x price to sales, close to its cheapest valuation in over a decade. Turnarounds take time, and patient investors are likely to be rewarded here. Action to take. Buy Nike, NYSE, NKE, up to $100 per share. Diageo continues its portfolio transformation. On December 17, global alcoholic beverage leader Diageo, NYSE, DAO, announced an agreement to sell its 65% stake in East Africa Breweries, Able, and its 54% stake in UDV Kenya to leading Japanese beverage group Asahi for $4.8 billion. Diageo is receiving a 19x EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, multiple on the sale. Diageo has been selling these assets because its performance in the region has been weak. Its ownership in Able contributed 5% of total company revenue but only about 2% of profits. The company has been shifting to a higher margin licensing and royalty model in Africa, a strategy that is much less capital intensive compared to owning all the manufacturing for what has become a non-core asset. The company noted that it will continue to solidify long-term distribution agreements for key brands such as Guinness, Smirnoff, and Johnnie Walker in these markets. This Able deal also allows the company to accelerate its debt reduction. Diageo's debt to EBITDA ratio will fall 0.25x, likely putting it under 3x by the end of fiscal 2026. The 3x level is the high end of investment grade debt ratings, a level that represents a lower risk of potential default. The cash from the Able sale should also increase investor confidence in the stability of dividends. At a current yield of 5.8%, investors might have worried about the potential for a cut in the dividend to preserve cash for debt paydown. This would appear to put those fears to bed. Bigger picture, spirits consumption in the U.S. has been declining this year. Cash-strapped consumers have less purchasing power today given all the inflation that has flowed through the financial system. Data for the tequila category, for example, has been worse recently, leading to price reductions in the high-end Casamigos brand. The company has been controlling its Accelerate cost-cutting program, increasing its savings target to $625 million over 3 years from an initial $500 million goal. And new CEO Sir Dave Lewis has just taken over as Diageo CEO. Lewis is known for leading the turnaround of British supermarket giant Tesco from 2014 to 2020. Diageo still holds one of the highest quality portfolios in the alcohol industry, and at a valuation of 11x EBITDA and a high single-digit free cash flow, FCF, yield, DAO shares are as cheap as they have been in the last decade. The stock looks too cheap for investors to continue to ignore. Action to take. Buy Diageo, NYSE, DAO, up $160 per share. South Korea provides Coupang roadmap for Taiwan. On November 4, South Korean e-commerce leader Coupang, NYSE, CPNG, reported an interesting Q3 revenue was $9.3 billion, up 18% from the same quarter a year ago and 2% ahead of analyst expectations. Its product commerce segment continues to be the bright spot, with revenue of $8 billion, up 16%. The number of active customers reached 24.7 million, an increase of 10%. Product commerce EBITDA was $705 million, a whopping 50% increase from last year's Q3, with margins improving 2 points year-over-year, YI, to 8.8%. This marked the third quarter in a row that segment margins came in above expectations, showing the continued progress in Coupang's e-commerce profitability. Results for the developing offering segment was a mixed bag. Revenue of $1.3 billion was up 32%, gross margins were 29.4%, up from 24%, but total profitability of the segment continues to be an issue. The segment lost $292 million, worse than analyst expectations of a $240 million loss. Ironically, increasing sales momentum in Taiwan is driving those greater losses. Management commented that revenue for the company's Taiwan operations increased more than 100% YI, and the company has boosted its infrastructure investments in the region, particularly in last-mile shipping. The company is now guiding for the total loss for the year to be around $950 million, reflecting those larger investments in Taiwan. That sounds bad, but it implies a loss of $255 million for Q4, representing sequential improvement from the current quarter. As we approach Q4, investors are eager to see the segment's 2026 loss guidance. The company remains confident. Management commented that the pattern of customer adoption in Taiwan has looked very similar to Coupang's experience in South Korea as it built out the business there. Step by step, over time, the goal in Taiwan, as it now does in South Korea, will be for next-day delivery for all of the company's products. Right now, Coupang's service in Taiwan lags far behind what the company is able to provide in South Korea. Narrowing that gap is the key to gaining further traction in this high-growth market. Higher losses seem like something that would never be a positive. But it is different when those losses are driven by a good thing, robust investment and growth in a key market like Taiwan. The company is following the playbook that has given it such a strong online retail presence in South Korea. Investors would be wise to give management time for these initiatives to bear fruit. Action to take. Buy Coupang, NYSE, CPNG, up to $25 per share, all about autonomous at Uber Technologies, NYSE. Uber reported a strong Q3 on November 4th, with revenue of $13.5 billion, up 20% YI. Gross bookings were $49.7 billion, up 21% and 2% ahead of analyst expectations. Mobility gross bookings for its ride-sharing business of $25.1 billion increased 20%, and mobility revenue of $7.7 billion increased 20%, about 1% ahead of expectations. Total monthly active platform customers, MAPI, grew to 189 million from 161 million a year ago. These are customers who take at least one ride or use Uber Eats once a month. Delivery gross bookings of $23.3 billion grew 25%, 2% ahead of consensus, and delivery revenue of $4.5 billion was up 29% YI, both driven by increased membership penetration and robust growth from grocery and retail. Uber One, the Uber Eats subscription service, now generates about two-thirds of delivery bookings, with memberships in 42 countries compared to 28 this time a year ago. Yet despite these numbers, shares were down 5% following the report. One issue was disappointing margins. EBITDA of $2.26 billion was a slight miss compared to consensus, and Q4 guidance reflected more of the same. Q4 gross booking guidance of $52.25 billion to $53.75 billion implies YI growth of 17% to 21%, 2% ahead of expectations, and EBITDA guidance of $2.41 billion to $2.51 billion is in line with consensus. These numbers were good, but it seems not good enough. Autonomous vehicles represent real future growth for Uber. The company plans to expand into at least 10 cities by the end of 2026. New markets include Dallas, Dubai, London, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Current autonomous markets of Austin, Phoenix, and Atlanta are growing twice as fast as the rest of the company's U.S. presence. And the company highlighted key partnerships with NVIDIA, NVDA, to scale L4 autonomous vehicle deployment, or cars that can self-drive completely within a defined city or highway as opposed to level 3 in which a human has to be ready to take over. Currently, the Uber model is to generate revenue from bookings using vehicles owned by drivers or other third parties. Management is increasingly buying vehicles as a way to generate utilization data that will help it finance its own fleet more efficiently. Purchases are expected to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and thus not that harmful to future cash flow, about $8 billion per year now. But having this data will allow potential lenders to see the profitability of the strategy and lower borrowing rates. For all the excitement over competitors like Alphabet's, GOOG, Waymo, the potential for autonomous within Uber continues to be underappreciated. Startups like Waymo continue to lose money while trying to gain scale. Uber has been both growing into this new autonomic frontier while also improving profits. Autonomous isn't going to happen overnight, but it is happening. And meanwhile, the company continues to deliver in its core segments to support that growth. Investors should continue to go along for the ride. Action to take. Buy Uber Technologies, NYSE, Uber, up to $100 per share. Porter & Company, Stevenson, Maryland. For important disclosures and disclaimers, please visit our legal disclosures page. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hoped you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys, where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the best buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.